Hello. I'm the bit before the theme music. Now, you're probably wondering, do we really need the bit before the theme music? And I ask you this, do we really need the listeners? Because we haven't got many. In fact, we've only got three. So I'm the bit before the theme music. You're the listener. Let's just accept our places in this life and let's move on with the show. Please run the theme music.
What's this? What's this?
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
What's this? What's this?
It's Christmas time.
What's this? What's this?
It's all humbug, I tell you.
What's this? What's this?
Well, says team, trusty old Red Rider Carbine Action 2 on the Shot Range Model Air Rifle.
What is this?
It's the Total Christmas Podcast with your host, Jack.
He's got the IQ of a rabbit.
Yes, but he's got the faith of a child. Simple.
Hello, you beautiful people, and welcome to the Total Christmas Podcast. I'm your host, Jack. Shall we do the interactive bit? Shall we? I sort of feel like we should. Because that sets us apart. Do you know what I mean? There's other podcasts out there. They haven't got an interactive bit. This is the interactive bit. Let's just do it. We'll do a quick one, okay? What's your favourite colour? Nice. That's my favourite colour too. How was that? That was something different, wasn't it? Instead of me asking how you are, I've learned something about you. I don't have a massive amount to talk about before I get on with the show, but I got a fantastic email from Timothy Lewis, and I don't know if you remember, but in the last episode, one of the questions in the podcast was about a bloke who rolled a Brussels sprout up Mount Snowdon in Wales. And Timothy sent me a link about a man from Colorado Springs who made history after pushing a peanut up Pike's Peak with his nose. Yeah, it's not as Christmassy as a Brussels sprout, but you know, well done to that gentleman. And do you remember last episode where I talked about cheese on Christmas cake? Well, Timothy's also put, on the subject of cheese, or more specifically, cheese on top of desserts, I don't know if you've heard of this before, but certain people in this country, meaning the States, will put a slice of cheese, American, or cheddar usually, on top of a piece of apple pie. I'm not one of those people, I don't like anything on my apple pie, never been a cake or pie and ice cream sort, but I have family that are this sort. Now, I was vaguely aware of that, that sometimes people do put a slice of cheese on their apple pie. Yeah, not something I've ever tried, but thanks for pointing that out. And he's also put, marzipan is not uncommon here, but it's usually served like fudge by itself, and it's probably most common in the southern states. Really? You're eating like a block of marzipan, like fudge? I can eat fudge, I don't like marzipan anyway, really. But I couldn't eat a block of it, even if I did like it, I don't think. That's not something people do over here much. But there you go. Actually, no, I have seen, you can buy like individually wrapped little marzipans, can't you? Normally in this country it comes in a big block and you'd use it for baking. But no, he's right. Yeah. Anyway, thanks for that, Timothy. Now let's get on with the show.
What the dickens?
Boys and girls, I don't know if you were listening to the last episode. I don't know what happened. I had my three downloads, so I hope you did. Last episode, I talked about a version of A Christmas Carol from 1913. It was a silent one, but in this one, Scrooge woke up from being visited by the ghosts, and it was still Christmas Eve. Yeah, and he saw the boy in the street on Christmas Eve, and he sent the turkey to Bob Cratchit's house on Christmas Eve. And I made a point of saying that that was a good thing, because on Christmas Day, they've already got their goose. They bought a goose. They've got a goose. It's there. It's ready. And then on Christmas Day, it's not the little boy in the street, actually. It's the guy from the poulterers. He takes the turkey directly to Bob Cratchit's house on Christmas Day. They've already got a goose. They've got that there. But now they've got this humongous turkey, and it's the prize turkey. It's hanging there now. Well, it's not hanging there now. It was hanging there then, but it's not now because it's round the Cratchits. They've got to somehow deal with this turkey. And this has plagued me for a long time. Every time I think, you know what, that's ridiculous. Why buy such a massive turkey? What are they going to do with that? Take them all day to cook it. Well, smarter brains than me have looked into this, and I found a very interesting article on a website called Infinite Quest. Well, it's actually Infinite Quest Podcast. They've got a podcast, but they didn't talk about this, or as far as I believe, they didn't talk about this on the podcast. But they have an article on their website where this is discussed. So I'm going to cut it down for you because it's like a 3,000 word article. And some of it sort of goes off at a tangent, and there's certain bits that I don't think are necessarily relevant. But I want to read out one of the quotes they've got, because this tells us roughly how big the turkey was. And the quote says, "On Christmas Day, December 1843, Bell's Weekly Messenger published reviews of different butchers and poulterers in London." Can you believe that? That was the same Christmas that A Christmas Carol was released. Yeah. "And of a Mr. Donovan's in Oxford Street, they said, the shop was crammed almost to suffocation and the samples were of a superior order. Here was a prize turkey, perhaps the largest in London, its weight 38.5 pounds. Yeah, 38.5 pounds. That's how big the turkey was. Probably not twice the size of Tiny Tim, although we don't know how tiny Tiny Tim was. Maybe it was twice the size of Tiny Tim. And the people on Infinite Quest podcast have done the maths, and that turkey would cost about, in today's money, $200. Yeah, about 160 odd quid. So not only did they establish the size of the turkey, they also look into how long it would take to cook. And they also go through what sort of time this turkey would turn up. So in December 1843, on the 24th, sunrise would have been just after 7 o'clock, so about 3 minutes past 7. That's when Scrooge apparently wakes up. He hears the bells. Now, also, they're saying that the first bells were likely to have been rung at about 7:30, possibly 8 o'clock. So we're going to say that he woke up at maybe 8 o'clock. I mean, it was a long night, wasn't it? So he woke up at 8 o'clock, then he shouts to the boy down in the street. And if that boy in the street wants to earn his half a crown, he's got to be back in 5 minutes. So there's no messing around. We get it there pretty quick. And then he takes a cab across to Camden Town to drop it off. When I say he, I mean the man from the shop, because it does say to the boy, bring the man back with you and the turkey. Anyway, we'll say that the turkey gets there by about 9 o'clock. Now, here's the deal. This turkey, it ain't the kind of turkey you're buying these days from Tesco's, which is possibly a good thing, because if you're buying your Tesco from turkeys, if you're buying your turkey from Tesco's, sorry, you're probably going to be looking at a frozen one. Well, it ain't frozen. That's a good point. The bad point, it ain't been plucked, has it? Possibly hasn't even been gutted. Probably hasn't been gutted, actually. It's unlikely you'd gut it first and then, like, I don't know. Anyway, so poor old Mrs. Cratchit, Christmas Day, she's got to spend the morning plucking and gutting a turkey and dressing it and whatnot. And when I say dressing it, I don't mean putting it in a dress. Or at least I don't think I do. I've never prepared a turkey. That's what my wife does. Anyway, we'll say it's dressed by 10 o'clock. I don't know. She might be chatting to her kids or telling them off for running around. I don't know. But she's got to get it all done. We'll say it's done by 10 o'clock. Okay, she's quick. She's not messing around, actually. I've decided. She's not telling the kids off. She's letting them run riot. It's Christmas Day. Give them a chance to enjoy themselves while she dresses the turkey in a brand new dress that she bought it for Christmas. That's not what happened. The turkey is ready at 10 o'clock. Well, how long does it take to cook a turkey? Well, I've got another quote for you. And this one comes from Mrs. Beaton's Book of Household Management. And it's arguably the most popular cookbook of the period. And here's a fun side note for you. You can still buy it on Amazon. Yeah, why not go and do that? So, it gives us cooking times of a small turkey, about 1.5 hours. A moderate sized one, which is about 10 pounds, 2 hours. A large turkey, 2.5 hours or longer. Well, if a moderate one is 10 pounds, well, this isn't just large, is it? This is extra large. But if they get it ready for 10 o'clock, they whiz it straight down to the baker's and chuck it in the ovens, it may well be ready by, you know, sort of 1 o'clock maybe. That's what, if we get it in there at 10, that's 3 hours. I'd like to think it's done in 3 hours. So yeah, all this time I've been there thinking, why on earth would Scrooge give them that? They're never going to cook it. They'll never get it prepared in time. Turns out they probably would, and they probably did. And that's why Bob Cratchit turns up late the next day. Or actually, maybe that's the reason he turns up late. It's not that he's making merry. It's because he didn't get his dinner till like 12 o'clock at night. That's probably not what happened. We've established that. Now, there's only one problem, isn't there? What's happening to that goose? Because there's going to be leftovers on that turkey. They've got this small goose, and that feeds everyone. Enough is as good as a feast. That's not what it says in the book, but it does say that they've all had enough to eat. And that is from this small goose. They've got this gigantic turkey now. It's not as if like they're going to polish off the whole lot. Well, maybe they will. Unlikely. Although there's a lot of them there, but it's 40 pounds of meat, not including the feathers. Feathers are very light. My point is, what's going on with that goose? Are they give it to someone else? Do they cook it the next day? I'm thinking they probably got leftovers. Let's not worry about the goose. Now, if you want to read the article, I will put a link on the Facebook page. Probably not the Facebook page. I say I will and I never do. But it'll definitely be in the show notes. So you can have a look at it right now if you want. Just go on the show notes, click on it. It'll take you to the link and you can read the whole thing. Yeah, and see what you think. I left out quite a lot. I didn't want to go into massive detail. Just the facts, madam. Just the facts. And I hope you found it interesting. It's changed the way I look at the turkey now. In the old days, I thought it was a ridiculous gift. Now I think, you know, not too bad. Now it's time for this.
I'm singing! I'm in a store and I'm singing! I'm in a store and I'm singing!
Hey! There's no singing in the North Pole.
Do you know, boys and girls, because I was talking about turkeys, I thought, why don't I stick on that subject for this episode's Christmas Not So Classic? Now, here's the deal. I say it's a Not So Classic because many of you may not have heard it. I have mentioned it on the podcast, and this song is the B-side to a very, very famous Christmas song. It's the B-side to this one. Now, Step Into Christmas was released in November of 1973. When it was first released, it peaked at number 24 in the UK singles, and in the States, it reached number 56 on the Cashbox Top 100 Singles Chart. Don't know what that is, but it got to number 1 on the Billboard Christmas Singles Chart. So I don't know if it ever made the Billboard Top 100, but in Australia, it got to number 31. And in New Zealand, it got to number 36. Other than that, it didn't break the top 40 in any other countries. Anyway, I'm not talking about that one. I'm talking about the B-side. And the song on the B-side of Step Into Christmas is called Ho Ho Ho, Who'd Be a Turkey at Christmas? And while I was researching the previous segment, I thought, do you know what? Maybe I should talk about that Elton John song, the one about turkeys. Well, let me tell you a secret, boys and girls. It ain't about turkeys. Doesn't even mention turkeys in it once. Well, it does, actually, in the title. That's the only time it mentions turkeys. Seriously. Now, I'm going to play a bit of it for you. Here it comes.
Sitting here on Christmas Eve with a brandy in my hand. Oh, I've had a few too many and it's getting hard to stand. I keep hearing noises from my fireplace. I must be going crazy.
Now, it was written by Elton John and his long-term writing partner, Bernie Taupin, and it's pretty much just singing about being drunk on Christmas Day. Well, I say Christmas Day because they start singing about who's coming down the chimney, so maybe it's Christmas Eve. All I know is the guy's drunk on brandy. Now, you listen to that bit I played for you. I thought it sounded very similar to Benny and the Jets, and funnily enough, the next single that Elton John released was Benny and the Jets. Yeah, there you go. Now, it's only the verse that sounds like that. The chorus doesn't sound anything like Benny and the Jets. Have a listen to it. Here it comes.
And I keep hearing, ho, 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 guess who's here? Your fat and jolly friend draws near. Ho, 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 surprise, surprise, the building wheel is just arrived.
Now, personally, I'm a big fan of Elton John's. I like a lot of his songs, but this one, I do not. I do not care for it at all. I like the A-side, I like Step Into Christmas, but this one, nah, thought it was a bit naff. But I thought you might not be aware of it, so I thought I'd share it with you. That's pretty much all I've got to say about it. So there you go, boys and girls. That's this episode's Christmas Not So Classic. And you know what? I haven't got a problem that it's not a classic. Now let's do this.
Do you hear what I hear?
Do you hear what I hear?
You know how something is so obvious, but you just don't realize it? I finally figured out that I have to find a new form of exercise. I mean, I like to jog, but the ice cubes just keep falling out of my glass. So I was thinking about the poem, A Visit from St. Nicholas, the other day, and especially this stanza. He had a broad face and a little round belly that shook when he laughed like a bowl full of jelly. Now we all know these lines, and much is often made of the little round belly part to describe Santa's rather plumpish demeanor. But I was more interested in the second part, a bowl full of jelly. I never really thought about it. But why would the author be talking about a bowl full of jelly? I mean, maybe a jar, but who would eat jelly by the bowlful? It's just a sandwich spread, usually grape-flavored and made with sugar, fruit juice, and pectin that you eat with peanut butter, maybe cream cheese, or sometimes by itself, but always on bread. Now, while I was thinking about this, I couldn't hear my Do You Hear What I Hear car alarm blaring, because while the poem mentions jelly, it's not really about jelly. Or at least, he didn't mean my jelly, but maybe Jack's jelly? Confused? Just think about if you were to order a peanut butter and jelly sandwich in England. They're going to deliver you bread with peanut butter and jello. Yep. In Britain, that bowl of gelatin is called jelly. In the U.S., our name for this dessert is jello. In the U.K., almost all gelatin products are called jelly, while in the United States, jello is the name we use. Gelatin is produced from collagen extracted from boiled animal bones and connective tissues, and it has been used as a food source since the 15th century. And guess where it originated? In England. Gelatin desserts originally were the province of royalty and the relatively well-to-do because it had to be purified, and this was costly and a time-consuming process. But then, in 1845, a patent for powder gelatin was obtained by U.S. industrialist Peter Cooper, and this made it available for the masses. Then in 1897, in New York, a powder gelatin dessert with added flavors was first trademarked as Jell-O. It had strawberry, raspberry, orange, and lemon flavoring that was added to granulated gelatin and sugar, and it became very popular. Now, this is an example of how a brand name becomes a generic term, like Kleenex, to describe similar items regardless of the brand. So the Jell-O that we use for those colorful holiday gelatin molds with various fruits or marshmallows or for our party shots, well, that is what is called jelly in England. Then what about what we call jelly in America? Do they call that Jell-O? No, it is what the English might call jam, but not really. In the United States, we use jelly as a general term that is used interchangeably for any sweet spread. We use it for both that soft, artificially flavored and colored kind, and then also for the textured type that is made with actual fruit chunks, pulp, or even seeds. So whereas the Brits may have the names jam, marmalade, and preserves, it's all for what we simply call jelly. The good thing is, Clement Clark Moore didn't use the common term for gelatin desserts before they were widely available. His poem would have read, "That shook when he laughed like a bowl full of calf foot's jelly." Cheers and happy Christmas.
Well, that's another fantastic piece of work from Bob and Nick. Great work, Bob. I've got to say, the funny thing about that is, Clement Clark Moore, of course, was American. Wasn't he? Yeah, and yet he used the term jelly. I suppose if he said jello, it wouldn't have rhymed with belly, but there you go. Yeah, great work, Bob. Thank you so much for that one. He'll be back again in a bit, but right now, we're going to do this. This is the quiz, this is the quiz, this is the quiz, this is the quiz. Boys and girls, it's your favourite part of the show, or your least favourite part of the show, or a bit of the show you don't care about. I don't know. I don't know. We've discussed this in the past. I remember there was an episode where I talked about if it was your favourite part or not. I went into it in depth. Or did I? I don't think I went into it in that in depth. I'm probably going more in depth into it this time than I did last time. Point being, it's the quiz. Now, I've had 3 emails about the last quiz. I don't know if you remember, boys and girls, but I scored a massive 7. That's right. Yeah. But I got an email from Timothy Lewis, and he's put, I don't normally keep score because it's usually quite abysmal, but I did manage to get 5 out of 10 on this week's quiz, although I do admit that Poland was just a guess. Well, good guess, because I got it wrong. Yeah, well done on that one, Timmy. And I also got an email from our American-Canadian correspondent, Benji Pearson. Now, there's a little bit of maths involved in this one, kids, so pay close attention. And Benji says, I scored 5 on your latest quiz, which just so happens to be my lucky number. So well done with that, Benji. But he's also put, now, since the other 5 questions were UK-focused, and of the 2.4 billion people that celebrate Christmas in the world, only 27.5 million are in the UK, those 5 UK-centred questions only equate to approximately 1% each of the total points available. That means that 5 universal Christmas questions were worth approximately 18% each, giving him an overall score of 94.8%. That's incredible, Benji. Incredible maths. Incredibly bad maths, actually. I don't know where you get only 27.5 million people in the UK celebrate Christmas, because I think we've got about 70 million of us here. And from what I can see, most of us are out celebrating Christmas. There's plenty that aren't, definitely not more than 50%. So maybe you want to go and redo the maths on that one, Benji. But congratulations on getting 94.84%. And I also got a message from Adam Parker from the Merry Britsmas podcast. If you don't listen to the Merry Britsmas podcast, you should, because the latest episode just dropped and it was a blinder. They're all blinders, actually. I love his podcast. Anyway, he sent me a message on Facebook saying that he also scored 7. Actually, I hate to admit it, but when he came on the show and we did the quiz, he actually beat me. Yeah, I think I scored 7 that time and he got 8. So it looks like he might know as much about Christmas as what I do. Anyway, that was last week's quiz. This is this week's quiz. Question number 1. Best known for Paradise Lost, which English poet wrote On the Morning of Christ's Nativity in 1629? Who wrote that poem? Actually, who wrote Paradise Lost? Yeah, that's really the question. Question number 2. In 2007, which hugely popular American group had a hit with Don't Shoot Me Santa? Any ideas on that one? I should hope so. I've talked about it on the show. Question number 3. Many people have played Scrooge in films, but which Scottish actor is often cited as the best ever for his portrayal in the 1951 film Scrooge? And then it says in brackets, Scrooge is the British title. In the US, it was released as A Christmas Carol, and sometimes the film is shown on British TV with the American opening titles. Yeah. And here's something a little bit embarrassing. Last episode, as a very brief aside, I mentioned Alastair Sim, and I also said that in the UK it was called A Christmas Carol, and in the States it's called Scrooge. Well, I got that completely arse about face, didn't I, boys and girls? You'll have to forgive me. And did I just say his name? Did I just say his name when I was talking then? I think I did. Can we ignore that? If I said his name, ignore that, all right? Just carry on, and then just see if you can guess his name. Right, next one. Goodness me. Alborus, Brody and Cryptus are 3 of the 110 varieties of what vegetable? Okay? Do you want to hear it again? Alborus, Brody and Cryptus. There's 110 varieties of this type of vegetable. But what is that vegetable? That's the question. Question number 5. In the cartoon Bugs Bunny's Christmas Carol, which character plays Bob Cratchit? Okay? Okay, question number something. That's an easy one, this one. Even Benji's going to get this. Which 1993 stop-motion animated musical film created by Tim Burton tells the story of Jack Skellington, the king of Halloween Town, who stumbles upon Christmas Town and gets obsessed with celebrating the season? Goodness me, that was a long-winded question. How about I just say this? Jack Skellington, what film's that? Okay, next one. A Christmas pudding should have 13 ingredients, which are said to represent what? What do those 13 ingredients represent? Why do they have 13 ingredients? Question number something. Which member of the Simpsons family gave Channel 4's alternative Christmas message in 2004? This is a bit tricky because you're there going, oh, well, that's Channel 4 in the UK. Yeah, but The Simpsons is an American show. So, you know, it's an American question. So don't get upset, Benji, because all my questions are UK-centric. They're not, although this one sort of is. Next one. Oh, we're up to number 9. That flew, didn't it? Question number 9. True or false, right? Boxing Day is not a bank holiday in Scotland. Is that true or is that false? In Scotland, do they get Boxing Day off? Okay. And the last question. In which 1996 film are two rival fathers, Howard Langston and Myron Larrabee, both desperate to get the same present for their sons in a last-minute shopping spree on Christmas Eve? Okay. Now, boys and girls, I've not helped you with this because I've actually taken out, it does tell you what the toy is. I'm not telling you what the toy is because it'd be almost as easy as that blooming Jack Skellington question. It's pretty easy as it is. Anyway, that's your 10 questions. Would you like your 10 answers? Well, then I'll give them to you. I'm guessing you said yes. If you said no, well, tough, you're getting them anyway. Right. Question number one. Who wrote Paradise Lost? And also that poem, On the Morning of Christ's Nativity in 1629. Well, I can tell you that was Milton. I will accept Milton as well. His actual name's John Milton, but I will accept Milton. Okay, question number two. In 2007, which hugely popular American group had a hit with Don't Shoot Me Santa? Well, that was The Killers, wasn't it? Yeah, and I did cover a couple of their Christmas songs. I covered Boots, and I covered A Great Big Sled. And part of me thinks that I also covered Don't Shoot Me Santa as well, but I'm not sure. I don't know. I definitely mentioned it. Anyway, question number three. Many people have played Scrooge in the films, blah, 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 Alastair Sim. Okay, that was the one. In 1951, Alastair Sim. I've probably said it. I won't know until I do the edit if I did actually say the name. And if I didn't say his name, then I'm looking a bit silly going on about, oh, I said his name. I said his name. Well, you didn't say his name, did you dick? Don't call me a dick. Right. Question number, I don't know. What type of vegetables are Arborus, Brody and Cryptus? Well, they are, of course, Brussels sprouts. Yeah. Pretty much, if you're thinking about a vegetable at Christmas, got to be a Brussels sprout, hasn't it? Can you think of another vegetable that you only eat at Christmas? I mean, not every country eats them at Christmas. We do. Buy it a bucket load. Right, question number something. In the cartoon Bugs Bunny's Christmas Carol, which character plays Bob Cratchit? And the answer is Yosemite Sam. Oh, I'm sorry. No, it bloody isn't. And I'll tell you why it isn't. Because it's not asking who Scrooge was, which is what I thought. So my answer was Yosemite Sam. Well, it ain't Yosemite Sam. I've lost another point. The correct answer was Porky Pig. Yeah, I have covered that version. And I know you pay very close attention to this show. So you would know that it was Porky Pig as Bob Cratchit. Question number something. Jack Skellington. What film? And the answer is, of course, The Nightmare Before Christmas. Question number, I don't know. A Christmas pudding should have 13 ingredients. But here's a question. Why? What do those 13 ingredients represent? Well, those 13 ingredients represent the song The 12 Days of Christmas. But here's the thing. In the old days, when people invented Christmas puddings, it had 13 verses. Yeah, it was, so on the 13th day of Christmas, my true love gave to me a Sony PlayStation, which is what he wanted the whole time anyway. All that other crap, it just went in the bin, never used it. But the Sony PlayStation was the gift. It was like all the others were just joke gifts, you see. And it doesn't actually end with counting down through all the gifts. It goes like this. I'll sing it for you. Only the 13th verse. On the 13th day of Christmas, my true love gave to me a Sony PlayStation. And I was very, very happy. And what a wonderful Christmas time we all had. There you go. So we've all learnt something today, kids. Oh, hang on. No, it's not. What a minute. That's not what it says here at all. Not even close. It represents Jesus and his 12 disciples. There you go. Which is slightly different to my take on that one. Okay. Question number whatever. Which member of the Simpsons family gave Channel 4's alternative Christmas message in 2004? Now, I don't think I've covered Channel 4's Christmas alternative message, but I know that Adam Parker has on the Merry Christmas podcast. Now, the Channel 4's alternative message, they pick someone fairly famous. I'm not going to go into who. Someone who's sort of famous at the time or of the year. And they give an alternative Christmas message that is broadcast at the same time as the Queen's speech is broadcast. And in 2004, because at the time, Channel 4 was showing The Simpsons. I think they still got it, actually, because BBC had it for a while. I think it went from BBC to Channel 4. Yeah, I think it's on Channel 4. I don't know. Anyway, I just watch it on Disney Plus. Anyway, so this one year, because The Simpsons had moved to Channel 4, one of the members of The Simpsons family gave the Christmas speech. And you've only got five to choose from. Well, I say five. You've only really got four, haven't you? Because it's not going to be Maggie, because Maggie don't talk. Anyway, which member of The Simpsons family was it that did the alternative Christmas speech? It was Marge. Yeah, and I watched it. I can't remember much about it. It's 20 years ago, but I remember it. Next one. Oh, we're up to question 9. Okay, right. Boxing Day is not a bank holiday in Scotland. Is that true or false? Well, the answer to that is false. It is a bank holiday, but I think it wasn't until the 70s, the 1970s, where it was actually became a bank holiday. So if I'd asked you that question 50 years ago, then the answer might have been no. But it isn't 50 years ago, is it? I'm asking you now. And the answer is, it is a bank holiday. It's false. Final question. In which 1996 film are two rival fathers, Howard Langston and Myron Larrabee, both desperate to buy a toy for their sons in a last minute shopping spree on Christmas Eve? Well, it's a Turbo Man action figure. That's the bit I left out. And the answer, of course, is Jingle All The Way, in that critically acclaimed masterpiece that we all love. So, there's your questions. Let's see how many I got. Yeah, I got 8, and I'm a bit annoyed about that, because to be honest, I should have known that it was Milton that wrote Paradise Lost. To be honest, I should have known that it was Milton that wrote that poem about Christ's Nativity in the Morning or whatever. And also, I read the question wrong, didn't I? I wasn't paying attention, and that's why I thought it was Yosemite Sam rather than Porky Pig. I'm being strict with myself here, kids. I'm not messing around. I still got 8. I'm happy with that. I'm not happy with it, but I would be happy with it on any normal day. I'm not happy with it because I should have at least got 9. Benji, why don't you let me know how you got on that time? Because I think those questions were a lot more global, yeah, than previous ones. Let me know how you got on. Now it's time for this. I tell you what, boys and girls, I'm running a bit low on Christmas jokes now, yeah. But my Christmas jokes for Grumpy Blokes book, I've rinsed that out. Anyway, I've got one for you. It's all right, I think, you know. Make of it what you will. So, here it comes. I asked my wife what she'd like for Christmas, and she said nothing would make her happier than a diamond necklace. So that's what I got her. Nothing. Hey, it's not bad, actually, is it? Could be a lot worse. Yeah. Anyway, let's move on. Let's do something else. Come on, let's go. Let's go. Get out of here. It's the return now of Lord Robert of Baker. And I've got to say, Lord Robert, you are looking glorious as ever.
Thanks, Jack. What the duck? My Jeep Wrangler was recently ducked. This is the act of placing a rubber duck on someone's Jeep, called Jeep ducking or duck duck Jeep. It is a phenomenon that began in a small town in the Canadian province of Ontario, and it has spread to the United States as well as nearly a dozen other countries around the world. The woman who first placed a rubber duck on a Jeep, Allison Parliament, she started a movement of kindness, fellowship, and recognition. And since then, this craze has spread onto cruise ships and in offices and around university campuses. It is like a tiny rubber smile of joy hidden in plain sight. These ducks will often come with tags for the person who discovers them. They can either keep it for themselves or hide it again for someone else to find. Keep it or hide, you decide, many of the tags will say. Well, the great thing for us is there are many Christmas-themed rubber ducks. You may have Santa and Mrs. Claus, elves and reindeer,
nutcrackers, angels, and Christmas trees. This is a wholesome game you can play on your unsuspecting friends and family. Buy a bag of these festive fowl and play hide and seek with them all around your house, your neighborhood, or your work. They'll be finding them for months afterward. And if you have a fun prank that you like to use to spread a little smile of joy, you tease it to Jack, he'll shock me with it, and together we'll spread our arms and ducks around the world.
I wasn't aware of this, but this summer, me and the girls have actually been leaving teddy bears out for people. I bought a job lot of them off Amazon, and we put a little tag on them, and it just says, you know, this little bear hasn't got a name or a home. Please take it home with you and give it a name, and email us to let us know what name you've called it. And I won't lie to you, we've put out about 20, and we've had about 6 people get back to us, which, you know, could be a worse hit rate. And because we talked about it on the podcast, Benji Pearson messaged me and said, oh, we'd like to do that as well. Could you email me what you've put on the labels so we could put them on our bears? And I sent him a batch of bears as well, and he's been leaving them out. And you know what, boys and girls? I've been getting emails from the people in Utah that have been finding the bears. Yeah, so if you listen to the girls' podcast, I'm Not Complaining with Robin and Juno, you'd be well aware of this. But if you don't, now you know. But that's a blinding one. I really like that, Bob. I think it's fantastic. So, yeah, why not go and put a rubber duck somewhere? Nice. Now, while I'm here, I have, of course, got to talk about Bob's podcast, and it's called Festive Foreign Film. I know I do it every episode, and you're probably sick of hearing about it. But you know what? There's people out there that probably still haven't listened to it. I don't know who you are. If I did know who you are, I'd come around your house. I'd sit you down. I'd say, listen to this. I shouldn't have to. You should listen to it anyway. Festive Foreign Film Fans. He talks about foreign Christmas films. And it's great because they're ones you've never heard of before. That's what makes it so good. And that's what I think is good about when I do a different version of A Christmas Carol, because there's always going to be versions you've seen before. But what about the ones you haven't seen? Well, that's what I'm teaching you about. Yeah, and that's what Bob's teaching you about. Christmas films from overseas that you may never have heard of. So check it out, and now let's do this. So boys and girls, this episode we're going to Mexico, and we're going to be looking at the tradition of the Mexican posada. Now posada, I hope I'm saying that right. I probably ain't, you know me. The word means inn or lodging. And this tradition takes place on the 9 nights leading up to Christmas Eve from December the 16th up to the 24th. Now, back in the 10th and 11th century, Bible plays were used to teach religious doctrine as opposed to verbal stories. They'd actually put on plays so that people would learn about stories from the Bible. And also, you know, they didn't write them down because most people couldn't read. But if you watch a play, it really sticks in your head. Now, these were outlawed for some reason, I don't know, some boring git decided they didn't want to do them. But in 1586, Friar Diego de Sora obtained a papal bull as a public decree issued by the Pope from Pope Sixtus V, stating that Christmas Mass should be observed for 9 days throughout Mexico. So he created this play to teach the nativity to the natives of Mexico, the Aztecs. Now, originally, the Aztecs already celebrated the winter solstice, so to merge the two holidays together was really easy. And what happens is, on these posadas, I've told you all about, I keep saying posada, you don't even know what it is. I'm going to tell you now. What it is a bunch of people get together, so it could be a neighbourhood, or it could be like a congregation of a church, or it could just be a family thing, and they establish where the inn is, the posada that they're going to go to, and a couple of them will dress up as Mary and Joseph, although I did read that sometimes they'll have like a couple of models that they've made, or like dolls or mannequins maybe of Mary and Joseph that they carry through the streets, and you'll have a little kid dressed up as an angel at the front carrying a candle, and they go through the streets, and on the way they'll knock at a few houses, people that are in on it, and they'll go, oh no, you can't come in, no, I've got no room, you can't come in. Eventually they get to the posada, they knock on the door, they have a bit of a to and fro about letting them in, because obviously there's no room at the inn, and then eventually they say, okay, come on in, and have a massive party. Yeah, and this happens 9 nights leading up to Christmas Eve. And often on Christmas Eve, the final one, it ends up at a church where they all get drunk in a church, I suppose. I'm hoping. Be a bit boring if you didn't, after you've had 8 nights of it. Mind you, after 8 nights, you might be like, oh, can we have a night off? I don't know. Yeah, so you've got Mary and Joseph, and you'll also often have a donkey, and there might be like sometimes musicians, and you'll have three people dressed up as wise men, and like all the other kids get to dress up as shepherds, and there'll be like a herd of them going through the streets, and like people see the party going on, they might join in. It's like a really communal atmosphere. Now, the things that they'll have at the party, normally they'll have a type of hot punch, and it's traditionally prepared with, I'm going to say this wrong, tejocote, I don't know, which is Mexican hawthorn, sugarcane, tamarind, apple, pear, guava, and cinnamon sticks. And if you're lucky, you might get the old ponche con piquete, I don't know. It's going to have alcohol in it, if you're lucky. Yeah, might have some tequila or rum in. Yeah, they'll also put on food, normally tamales or something like that. And the children will be given aguinados or bolos, which is little bags of candy to take home with them. And there'll be a piñata. Now, the piñata they have at Christmas is a star to represent the Star of Bethlehem, but it's supposed to have 7 points on it. Now, I won't lie, I saw quite a few when I was researching this that had more than 7 points. But the point is, it's meant to have 7 points to represent the seven deadly sins. And the idea is that they hit the star and destroy the seven deadly sins, and God's bounty comes pouring out. Yeah. Now, another thing I read was that the reason it goes on for 9 days is because each of the days represents a different value. So on the first day is humility, second day strength, third day detachment, then charity, trust, justice, purity, joy, and generosity. But I only read that in one place, so I'm not quite sure how true that is. But, you know, it's something, isn't it? Now, at the party, you're likely to sing loads of Christmas songs and that sort of thing. But when you first get there, they sing a song. It's like a call and respond song from the people outside the party and the people inside the party. This is called the Posada Litany, and I'm going to play a bit of it for you. Here it comes. If you speak Spanish, you probably understood every word of that. If you don't speak Spanish, you ain't got a clue. Well, don't worry, because I'm going to sing it for you. Well, I'm not going to sing it, I'm going to say it. So I'm going to read this exactly as it's written. Here it comes. This is the outside bit. In the name of heaven, I beg you for lodging, for she cannot walk, my beloved wife, inside. This is not an inn, so keep going. I cannot open, you may be a rogue. Outside. Don't be inhuman, have mercy on us, the God of the heavens will reward you for it. Inside. You can go on now, and don't bother us, because if I become annoyed, I'll give you a thrashing. Outside. We are worn out, coming from Nazareth. I am a carpenter, Joseph by name. Inside. I don't care about your name, let me sleep, because I already told you, we shall not open up. Outside. I'm asking you for lodging, dear man of the house, just for one night for the Queen of Heaven. Inside. Well, if it's a queen who solicits it, why is it at night that she travels so alone? Outside. My wife is Mary. She's the Queen of Heaven, and she's going to be the mother of the divine world. Inside. Are you Joseph? Your wife is Mary? Enter, pilgrims. I did not recognise you. Outside. May God pay, gentle folks, your charity, and thus heaven heap happiness upon you. Inside. Blessed is the house that shelters this day the pure virgin, the beautiful Mary. And altogether they say, enter, holy pilgrims, receive this corner, for though this dwelling is poor, I offer it with all my heart. There you go. Yeah, that's the song, and that's exactly how they sing it in Mexico. So, if you're in Mexico, you know, and you see a bunch of people trooping through the streets all dressed up like that, you'll know it's a posada. Yeah, I think that's a fantastic tradition. A little bit like carol singing, but with a twist, because at the end, you're guaranteed to be able to get hammered. Nice! Now let's do this. Well, boys and girls, I haven't had a recommendation in a little while, but I've got one for you now, and I think you'll like this. And I also think Bob Baker might like this one as well. Now, the podcast was recommended to me by my dear listener, Timothy Lewis. That's right. Three times we've heard from him in this episode. And the podcast is called Words Unraveled with Rob Words and Jess Zafaris. Now, his real name is not Rob Words. His real name is Rob Watts. But he's called Rob Words because he knows a lot about etymology and where words come from. And there's not much blurb. It just says, Jeff Zafaris and Rob Watts unravel the stories behind everyday words. And I won't lie to you, kids. It's really good. Yeah, really interesting. Like each episode, they pick a different topic and they'll discuss it. I listened to one the other day, which would be apt for young Bob, because they talked about the difference between words that we use in the UK and words that are used in the US. Yeah, but it's not just that. It's everything. They talk about everything and I highly recommend it. And that's all I have to say on that subject, but check it out. Great podcast. All you've got to do is Google Words Unraveled podcast and you won't have any trouble finding it. And that is it for this episode. I want to say a massive thank you, of course, to Bob Baker for his two fantastic segments. I also want to say thanks to Adam Parker, Benji Pearson, and Timothy Lewis for letting me know their scores. I'm always interested to know how people got on in the quiz. So, you know, if you want to, just send me the number through the email. Yeah, that'd be interesting, wouldn't it? If I just get loads of emails, just send up 1, 5, 7. Yeah. Anyway, up to you. I hope you've enjoyed the show. If you want to get in touch, please do. You can email me at totalchristmaspodcast@gmail.com. You can go on the website, totalchristmaspodcast.com. Or you can message me on the Facebook page. Go and check that out. Like it. I don't put a massive amount on there. Sometimes I do when I remember to. Other times I don't. But most of the links I'd put up on there are in the show notes anyway. So have a look at the show notes. There's links there. Yeah. I'll be back again in 2 weeks' time. In the meantime, you know I love you. Merry, happy Christmas.
Sonny!
Yes?
Nothing would thrill me more greatly than to shoot you. Knocking off a youngster ain't gonna mean all that much to me. Understand?
Mm-hmm.